The true method of knowledge is experiment. William Blake.
Empowerment in education. Two powerful elements that will help you break free of convention and transform your passion for wellness to a level beyond the status quo. The Essential Oil Revolution, where you're given the tools to supersede an ordinary everyday lifestyle. Inspiring speakers, DIY recipes, healthy living tips, and more. You'll discover it all here. So tune in and get ready for a wellness revolution.
Happy New Year, everyone, and thanks for tuning in to the Essential Oil Revolution. I'm your host, Samantha Lee Wright. Have you ever known anyone in your life who has what are known as sort of mystery illnesses? People who are unwell and sick, they're fatigued, they're struggling, they've been to doctor after doctor after doctor, and no one can give them an answer. It can be a heart-wrenching place to be in. Today on our show, we welcome back Greg Lee, who is one of the world experts on helping patients who are dealing with chronic persistent Lyme disease and other illnesses tied in. Greg focuses on essential oils and how they can help his patients break down biofilm, support the whole body system, and get to a point where the body can start to heal itself. We focus a lot specifically on Lyme disease for this episode, but for those dealing with any other chronic or mystery illnesses, there's a ton of super helpful information in here for you as well, especially revolving around how essential oils can be approached and tied in to your courses and treatments. As many of you know, my daughter was diagnosed with Lyme disease in February of 2020, so I give a little brief update on how she's been doing during this interview. Thank you so much to all who have reached out and been asking how she's doing. Layla is doing much, much better now. She's in a really good place. We're not out of the woods yet, and you'll hear a little bit more about that during the interview. Today's episode is a recording done live for our Essential Oil Insiders group. Our Insiders group is a private membership group where you get access to exclusive content, live trainings, and Q&As. For example, today's interview with Greg Lee was recorded, and then right after the recording, we opened up the floor for questions and answers from our insiders. We had so many amazing questions, and then we talked about stuff even more in our Insiders membership group. If you're not yet a part of this amazing community, you can try it out completely free for 30 days. Just go to revolutionoilspodcast.com/insiders for more details. Now, quickly before the show, my favorite essential oil this week is a shout out to Juniper Essential Oil. Juniper is not one that is on the top of my mind a lot, but one of our insiders was asking for me to do a profile on juniper. So I did a deep dive and I started using this oil more and I really fell in love, and it brought me back to when I went to actually visit the Young Living Farms in Mona, Utah, where I got to visit and they were distilling juniper that day. So the entire air smelled like juniper. And if you've ever been to the Young Living Farm in Mona, Utah, there's this beautiful little winding little stream that runs through the entire farm. And the offshoot of the distillery actually pumps into this little creek. And so the entire creek is just steaming and emitting this lovely aroma, and you can go stick your feet in it and it's nice and warm, and it's just such a treat. Juniper oil, I didn't realize, was such a staple in traditional medicinal culture. During medieval times, juniper berries were actually hung over doorways. They were thought to ward off witches during medieval times, and it was sort of the go-to in a lot of places for things like a diuretic, antiseptics, digestive cleansers, and stimulants. I was using it a lot over the holiday break, putting it over my kidney area. When my family gets together, we tend to hit the wine and the eggnog pretty hard, and so I just felt felt like my body needed a little extra help detoxifying and cleansing after a nice, fun, long week with family. So not only do I love the aroma, but juniper has so many supporting benefits to your kidneys, to your liver, to your digestive system, and it's a very spiritually awakening oil. And now let's pull a recipe out of our DIY dugout. Today's recipe comes from Colleen Blatchley in Northern Vermont, and it is called the Kids Clear Ear. To make the Kids Clear Ear, combine 4 drops helichrysum, 7 drops lavender, 5 drops melrose, 4 drops purification blend, put in a roller ball and top with jojoba oil, and then roll behind both ears and down the jawline as needed for kids 4 years and older. Awesome, Colleen. Thank you so much for your recipe. We love hearing all the amazing recipes that you guys send to us here on the show. You can submit yours by emailing us at DIY@revolutionoilspodcast.com. Every month we pull a winner out of our DIY dugout submitters, and you have a chance to win a bottle of orange oil and our special ebook chock full of our top favorite essential oil DIY recipes for around the house and home. Again, email us at DIY@revolutionoilspodcast.com.
Hello, dear friends. As an essential oil user, I know that you have probably come to not only appreciate, but to actually expect the powerful shift in emotions that you can get instantaneously when smelling your essential oils. When someone's dealing with the complex emotion of grief, life can get pretty heavy. Although emotions and essential oils can both be good allies, sometimes more is needed. I want to introduce you to a new podcast called A Place of Yes that is now available wherever you listen to podcasts. The host of the show is Heather Strother. Heather actually had a severe loss when she lost her 4-year-old son, Jack, suddenly to medical complications. 13 years later, now Heather is sharing the only way that she could move forward from the loss. This was by channeling her grief for the good and finding a place of yes. Now, her and her husband have created a nonprofit organization called Jack's Help from Heaven. Since then, they've helped hundreds of families with medically fragile children raise more than $1 million to help them to purchase with items that are not just medically necessary, but also convenient. Their goal is to improve the quality of life, and it offers you an opportunity to learn strategies to cope with grief and how to truly be there for someone that you love that is grieving. Now, sometimes the guests aren't just talking about the loss of a child, but the loss of the life they thought that they were going to live. And I know that we can all relate to that. Please listen to A Place of Yes now wherever you listen to podcasts. And also visit our sponsor at jackshelpfromheaven.org/news/podcast and learn about Heather and Brian's incredible nonprofit organization.
Hello, dear friends. In today's world, it's hard to maintain balance in any area of life. This includes in regard to our hormones. Let's face it, stress impacts everyone, and this affects our hormones. Compound stress on top of an already fluctuating cycle, and not so happy symptoms can result. Thankfully, we have essential oils to tame our mind and body, but a lot of times, many women need something more to keep their hormones at a healthy level. And that something more is where Happy Mammoth comes in. And right now, they are generously offering you 15% off your first order when you visit happymammoth.com and use promo code REVOLUTION. Happy Mammoth is a forward-thinking, all-natural wellness brand. They are obsessed with empowering people with quality natural health solutions aimed at promoting total body health and vitality. I love their comprehensive formula, Hormone Harmony, which contains herbal extracts that help to support hormonal levels, stress, mood, resiliency, and blood sugar. In fact, it contains adaptogenic herbs that help the body adapt to any kind of stressors. This can help to keep hormones in much better balance. Due to its synergy, Hormone Harmony formulation can be used for women in perimenopause, menopause, and any female with symptoms of hormone imbalances. What I love as a naturopathic and functional medicine doctor is that their products are third-party tested for quality and purity, free of heavy metals, and free from artificial fillers. For all these reasons, I am confident recommending Happy Mammoth to my clients and grateful to be supplied with my own bottle for a happier mood and less bloated belly during that time of the month. I am so pleased to have a company that stands behind women's health and optimizing wellness through science and education. So please support Happy Mammoth and the show. For a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com with promo code REVOLUTION at checkout. That's happy, MAMMOTH.com, and use promo code REVOLUTION for 15% off your first order.
Hi, everybody. I am here with Greg Lee, who is a world expert on natural remedies for helping patients to heal persistent Lyme disease symptoms. He's the creator of the Essential Oils for Stopping Lyme Disease Training, where he shows medical providers how to use microparticle essential oils for resolving Lyme and co-infections, neurological symptoms, arthritis, and inflammation more quickly. Greg, you were on my podcast a while back for episode 214. So if people want to go back and get a little recap of what you do, I remember when you were on, I just kept question after question. I just had so many questions. The work that you do, I find to be so unique and so important. You do a ton of work, not only healing patients from chronic Lyme disease and co-infections, but also training other practitioners on new methods of helping patients who are suffering from this terrible, terrible disease. From the outside looking in, I kind of see you as this almost Hercules of the Lyme world, because you're really kind of forging your own path here, and you're pushing the research forward. Like, you're going to places, you're pioneering new ideas. And I imagine when you go and you speak at, you know, conferences or things like that, a lot of practitioners are thinking to themselves, like, man, where did this guy come from? Like, he's telling me all these things that I've never heard before. So, you know, how do you know so much about Lyme disease? I'm curious if it feels that way to you, that you are sort of doing things that no one else is doing in this world.
Oh, I see the patients that have been to like 46 other medical providers, 16 of the Lyme litter doctors. And so I need to figure out what's not been treated or undertreated or missed. And so, you know, having, you know, encountered very complex, challenging symptoms and, a lack of diagnoses, I've had to develop ways, treatments, remedies, assessment tools to really see how I can help these people. Because most of them have done most of the Lyme protocols that are out there, and it's, you know, they've gotten many rounds of antibiotics and they're still sick. So, you know, it's really a very complex puzzle because every person's different. It's not like, oh, okay, you're a Lyme patient and here you go.
You're like sort of the hero to the underdog and lost causes in the Lyme world, which there's a ton of. It's a very tricky disease. So, and real quickly, for those that don't know my history with this, you know, my side of the Lyme disease equation is that my daughter, Layla, who is 6 years old now, was diagnosed with Lyme disease about 2 years ago. And so everything that I'm speaking on today and why I get so passionate about, you know, talking to Greg about this stuff is just from a mom's perspective. And seeing, you know, my daughter go through this journey, and we have a kind of a very typical journey when it comes to Lyme disease. She had these sort of mystery symptoms crop up seemingly out of nowhere. Her manifestations were mostly looking like arthritis. She had swelling in her knee, a couple of her other joints, and it took almost a year. It took about 9 months before we finally got a Lyme diagnosis. And hearing other people's stories, that's actually pretty good compared to some people who it may take years and years to get that diagnosis. And it had it not been for myself fiercely advocating to get her retested for Lyme, well, tested in the first place, and then when that came back negative, retested, saying, no, I really don't think that it's
they wanted to diagnose her as juvenile idiopathic arthritis, which for a grown-up might be diagnosed like rheumatoid arthritis. And I was like, this just doesn't feel right, right? There's got to be more to this equation. So anyway, we finally got the positive test result, which I feel very grateful for because I know that's not always easy to do. And now we're, you know, in that next phase of treatment and whatnot. So I say all that just to give a brief history. I wanted to have you, Greg, explain to the listeners a little bit about the difference between chronic Lyme disease and acute Lyme. You know, if someone were to just get bitten by a tick, you know, let's say today, what's the first thing that they should do? And then what's that time window of treatment? And what does that look like if you miss that kind of window of getting it early enough so that it doesn't turn into chronic Lyme?
So when patients get a tick bite, then what I recommend is obviously to remove the tick, but to remove it in a way so it's not squishing the contents into the person. So basically, there's a tick, you take tweezers and you gently extract it out as best you can out of the skin, and then save it in a sealed container. And then you also want to sterilize the area because ticks can carry Lyme, they can carry over 80 other different infections. So, you know, whatever, you know, just make sure that the site is as clean as possible. And then there's many labs that test ticks. There's a list of them on globallymealliance.org. But several of them now, due to either funding or COVID, have been temporarily closed. Some people, you know, may have to wait to get their ticks tested. But that can tell you, and you obviously want to, some of them actually charge a very low fee, some, you know, so it's affordable. And you want to be able to test not only for Lyme, but also co-infections like Babesia and Bartonella and Ehrlichia and other things that are anaplasmosis that show up, especially depending on where you are, you know, in the country. And
yeah.
It's very important also to try to get some sort of early treatment, even though you may not have symptoms, because it does take a while for the immune system to produce antibodies that can be then picked up on a blood test. If you get tested too early, then you're negative, you know, but it may have been too early and right. The immune system hasn't produced the antibodies yet.
Yeah, that's a problem. I want to pause there for a second because that's a very, in my area, I live in the mountains of North Carolina in the Appalachian Mountains. We have a ton of ticks and Lyme disease is very much climbing over here. And it's so interesting to me that I have person after person who tells me their story of, oh, I got bit by a tick and I went to the doctor immediately. They didn't want to test the tick. They didn't want to give me antibiotics. They just wanted to wait and see if I got a bullseye rash or if I got symptoms, and then they were going to deal with it. And you and I both know that that's not the best course of action. So I've had a lot of people say, I had to yell at my doctor and say, give me some antibiotics. Like, I'm not going to take that risk. And it's so funny to me too, because in my eyes, I see so many doctors who will give out antibiotics like candy, but you go and tell them you got bit by a tick and they're so like hesitant. I don't know. Do you see that as a trend?
Well, given a certain Lyme doctor's experience in North Carolina a while back, a lot of doctors, and also in Maryland and other states, a lot of doctors are very hesitant to treat Lyme too soon or without supporting evidence like a bullseye rash or a positive test. So, you know, there is hesitancy I can understand that given that a medical review is not a pleasant experience and it's very costly also to go through. So,
yeah,
you know, a lot of medical providers, you know, have that concern. So, and also, a lot of the old studies had, like, I think it was a mouse study that said, oh, the tick needs to be attached 24 to 48 hours to transmit the infection of Lyme. But now we know that, you know, there's other infections like Powassan virus that can be transmitted in 20 minutes. And, you know, I don't think right. There's any tests there, but, you know, for it. However, the more recent tests show that it takes up to 6 hours to transmit Lyme in now animal studies, but you know, not many practitioners are going by that standard that I know of, at least primary care practitioners.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's tricky too. I mean, if you're an avid, you know, hiker or outdoors person, you don't want to be fearful of going into the woods, and you don't want to pop antibiotics every time you get, you know, bitten by a tick or you think you do. So it's interesting trying to find that balance of, well, of being safe and protecting yourself. But just a quick snapshot, if you wouldn't mind, Greg, of what does Lyme disease look like in the United States today, as far as the numbers we're seeing now versus, you know, I don't know, 10, 20, 50 years ago?
Well, the numbers, it depends. You need to have accurate reporting to have accurate numbers. And right, given that the CDC estimates that 90% of cases are misdiagnosed, and their website says it's about, what, 200 something thousand. I don't remember the exact number. And then there was a study out of Tufts University that said in 2020, there's going to be an estimated 2 million cases. So there's CDC says, I think it's 30,000 cases, but they estimate 90% misdiagnosis. So then you have an estimated, according to CDC, about over 300,000. Tufts is saying 2 million. So you're talking like a huge difference in those numbers. So it just.
Yeah. Let's talk about that 90% misdiagnosis for a minute as well, too. What does that normally look like? Why is it getting misdiagnosed so often?
Oh, a lot of patients can come in with symptoms that mimic other illnesses because Lyme is called the great imitator, and it could be fatigue, it could be brain fog, it could be, you know, insomnia, it could be, you know, gut issues, it could be chronic pain, it could be arthritis. There's many, many ways that it can affect a person depending on, you know, their ability to detox or deal with inflammation or fight infection. So it shows up many, many different ways. And that can be, for a practitioner that's not trained in that, it can be seen as like, hey, of course, it's like an arthritis patient, or go take some anti-inflammatories, or, you know, it's just, you know, practitioners need more training. And I hear that over and over again, because it can show up in many different ways. And then if they decide, you know, they often use the two-tier testing method, the ELISA and the Western blot. And the ELISA, and according to estimates I've seen at conferences, is about 30-40% accurate, and Western blot is about 50% accurate. So
even if you convince your doctor, hey, I might have Lyme disease, and they're like, okay, well, let's test you. You get that test done, you have about a 70% chance of getting a false negative, right?
With the ELISA, yeah.
For the ELISA, which is usually the first one they'll do. They won't typically do a Western blot until you do that ELISA. Is that right?
Yeah.
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 So you could advocate for yourself and say, no, I want to go straight to the Western blot. But even with that, you still have, what, about a 50% chance of a false negative?
With the standard Western blot, there are specialty labs that you need to pay out of pocket. And some insurance may or may not cover it, but it really depends on your insurance company and your doctor's, you know, ability to, you know, communicate with your insurance company.
Yeah.
And they test for more strains. They sometimes they will like let the whatever sample do amplify so they can, you know, have it grow over time, and then they can detect it more.
It does. It's tricky. It's really tricky. So we've kind of talked about the problems out there around misdiagnoses and just the trouble of getting that positive, yes, you have Lyme disease. Okay. Once you get to that point, though, once you are considered, okay, you have Lyme disease, that's where you step in, right, Greg? And you work with patients who have been dealing with this for a long time, trying to get treatment, trying to get rid of their symptoms or lower their symptoms. But as you said, there's no one treatment for Lyme or co-infections that might go along with that Lyme disease. Each person needs their own set of tools and their own modalities. Is that correct?
Yes, because it shows up in many different ways. It can be showing up in one person as a, you know, arthritic kind of illness. Another person can have more neurological, brain fog, tremors, vision issues, taste. Some people have lost taste. And all other people have like gut issues and, you know, digestion, bloating, you know, all sorts of inflammatory issues in the gut. And other patients can have like weird, like pain syndromes that, you know, move around or, you know, may have like electric-like feelings or burning symptoms, depending on if they may have co-infections that may also aggravate, you know, these weird symptoms that, you know, may baffle traditional medical providers.
Yeah. I want to pause for a second and talk about why these symptoms are so diverse. So maybe you can talk a little bit about how Lyme disease really works in the body, what it looks like. My understanding, it's these little spirochete bacteria that are just so tiny and so small that they sort of find a way to get into all these different places in your body. And once they're there, they're very hard to kind of root out. And that's why they can kind of cause so much havoc. But can you paint a little picture for us as well?
So the spirochetes are like corkscrew shaped, and they disseminate, have been shown to disseminate through like animals very quickly. Sometimes, you know, in less than a day, getting into the nervous system from a, you know, bite infection. And they have many ways that they through either toxins or stimulating certain kinds of inflammation that tell the immune system, hey, you need to go fight parasites, don't fight spirochetes. And it's called like TH1, TH2 immune responses. And then what happens is they're able to then kind of cloak themselves in different ways. They go into cyst form, or they go under what they create slime called biofilms, and it's much harder for the immune system to identify and then kill these things, given their different evasion methods that they use. Mm-hmm. And they can hide in cells and so many different forms.
Sneaky little buggers, aren't they?
Yeah, unfortunately.
Unfortunately. Oh, so back to the treatments that you're providing for people, the different tools, the different modalities. As we said, every person kind of needs their own approach. How exactly are you helping your patients map out those different paths that they're on?
So in order to treat something, you have to kind of get a sense of like, well, what are the biggest issues to treat? And so what we are, I'm currently in a research facility where there's, you know, all these labs and stuff. And I'm the weird one because I actually see patients. And what we're looking at now, we have an experimental scan that is non-invasive and that uses electrical frequencies to look at over 1,000 different infections, toxins, inflammation, inflammatory compounds, like regions of the brain, the gut, and to look for what are the biggest issues, what has been missing, what are the stealthy infections. And so we can then target what do we need to treat first? And often in chronic patients, it may be more getting their inflammation down or getting their mast cells less reactive or, you know, reducing their toxicity because, you know, of their genetics, they can't methylate or use B vitamins or folic acid to detox effectively, or they have low glutathione, or, you know, there's many, many different things that can show up that we identify and say, oh, wow, we need to really support this person. We need to nourish them before we start killing off stuff because their body just can't detox or get rid of the inflammation.
Right. And that's a really important point to understand. And from my personal experience with my daughter as well, that's where things got really tricky is, you know, working through there's lots of different Lyme protocols out there, different herbs you can take and different things to address the Lyme infection part. But if you're not addressing these other things that are going in the body, your body might not be able to necessarily handle it. So for my daughter, as an example, we have been dealing on top of Lyme with mold. You know, the house that we live in has some mold issues, and it took a really long time for us to really put all those puzzle pieces together of she responded really well to Lyme treatment, you know, to a certain extent. but not fully because her body, we weren't addressing the mold on top of that, which I think is a pretty common, you know, that's what I hear is a very common, connection, I suppose, for people not being able to fully heal from Lyme is because they're probably dealing with mold as well. Do you see that really often?
Over 50% of my patients have reported that, you know, especially when I see a person there on, you know, we've done a lot of treatments, they've done a lot of remedies, and they're still like haven't had major improvements, then that's often one of the main reasons why that, you know, oh, wow, we found, you know, a leak behind our shower, or, right, you know, we had a roof leak and, you know, we thought the guy fixed it, but he didn't. And it's, yeah, you know. So.
And it seems like for a normal, healthy person, they might be able to handle that, you know, not that mold's good for anybody, but if you don't have anything else going on, you might not necessarily notice or have any manifestation of symptoms. But if you're trying to really deal with any other chronic infection and mold at the same time, your body just can't cope. It just can't do it. I wanted to ask you a little bit about blood nourishing oils, because I think that that's a really important concept for people to understand as well.
So there are different essential oils in Chinese, according to Chinese medicine, that nourish the blood. Now, we often think of the blood as the red stuff in our veins, which it is. In Chinese medicine, it's also that which helps moisten. And so if you have dryness, or it also helps try to protect us from toxins, and it makes things like hypercoagulation or thick blood compounds. And when you have patients that are fighting a chronic infection over a long period of time, their blood can get thicker and thicker, creating this almost like jello-like blood that coats the inside of the vessels. And so there's different essential oils that have either nourishing, or they help break up that stagnant stuff in the blood. So, you know, one of the ones that we use often is cinnamon, because it's also a lot very warming. It also very moves the blood. It's very nourishing. It's also detoxifying. So it has many, many different properties that we'll give to patients to have them take it internally, either in microparticles or in a carrier oil. So that's one of the ones. There's another one called Angelica, which also nourishing for the blood. It's not as hot. So if patients, you know, have a lot of heat symptoms, and that one might be more suited to them as opposed to cinnamon. And so we look at, you know, these different, like, how's the person showing up? Do they need more warming? Do they need more cooling? Do they need more nourishing in the blood? Do they need more moving? And often when we see patients in our clinic, we're actually doing something called cupping and bloodletting. We're actually pulling out blood. And in almost every case, it comes out very thick and coagulated, like jello. And after I have one patient who was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis, and he basically, you know, didn't have the dexterity to feed himself, and did the cupping on him and pulled out all this thick, viscous blood. And afterwards, he could feed himself for the first time in several years, because that thick stuff, he said, described it was like concrete in my veins. And so the essential oils that really help move the blood, which we go over in our training course, and you can learn more about that at goodbylyme.com/training. The ones that help, you know, break up that thickness and move it. Now, there are some contraindications and cautions you take, because if you are on blood thinners, you know, that you need to have someone who's trained in how to work with that. So it's not just go willy-nilly start taking these things.
Yeah. And I think that's important to say as well. And I kind of want to reiterate that too. And, you know, this interview and the questions I've been asking, it's really, I love to get the information out there, and I love to empower people to use essential oils and put them into their treatment plans. But when you're dealing with Lyme, when you're dealing with co-infections and all sorts of chronic illnesses, it really is best to work with someone who knows what they're doing, because there's an order to things, there's a timing of things, there's a methodology to things, and there's an intricacy here that, you know, I want to kind of forewarn people from listening to this and going and just slapping some oils on and starting to, you know, just see what happens. That's probably not the best approach to do in this case. You really deserve to take the time to either do a more in-depth training on these things or work with someone who's willing to guide you, who is well-trained in these sort of things.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of stories from people. It's like, yeah, I heard about taking oregano oil. So I took a bunch and I had the biggest hurts of my life.
Yeah.
Like, well, maybe you ought to, like, you know, not go so aggressive. It's fairly strong.
Yeah. It's so hard. That's, as a parent, that was the hardest thing for me, is trying to accept the fact that I couldn't be too aggressive, because especially with Lyme, if when you're too aggressive, it can really backlash and cause a lot of issues. So there's a delicacy there that for someone who has been suffering for years, or for a parent who's watching their daughter suffer, it's really hard to accept that fact that you do have to go slow, and you just have to be delicate sometimes. So you map out these plans for people. I love that you're using all this experimental technology as well, which I think some people hear that word experimental technology and they automatically get a little, you know, skeptical. But, you know, at the bottom line, people, is the tools and the technology and the testing that are standard these days aren't good enough. And obviously, because there's so many people who are not getting the right treatment, not getting the right diagnoses, not getting the help that they need. And so we need people who are willing to use these quote unquote experimental technologies to push things forward, to push that research forward and get people the help that they need. You use oils for lots of different purposes. My understanding, the main two being, number one, to interact with the bacteria and the co-infections themselves. And then number two being to interact with the biofilm. So let's break these two parts down. What are the main oils you're using to actually go after the spirochetes and the Lyme?
Well, out of research out of Johns Hopkins, we see that the main, like, antimicrobial essential oils for like Borrelia and some of the co-infections are like oregano, cinnamon, and clove. And also one of the ones that I kind of don't use a lot, but is very powerful, is also garlic essential oil, because, you know, it makes a person smell like a garlic bomb.
Yeah.
And then you can enforce social distancing without any problem using garlic oil.
There you go.
So those are the main ones that I have used when I test patients for. Not only we use the scanning system, also test patients for different remedies, but also we do hands-on testing, actually over like 70 different oils that we look at. We also use like geranium. We also use myrrh. And other oils that have antimicrobial properties against Lyme and different co-infections. Mm-hmm. And many of them also inhibit or cut through the biofilms that Borrelia produces, especially like cinnamon, clove, and oregano. So, you know. Several years ago at one of the big Lyme conferences, it's all biofilms. And I was like, okay.
Yeah.
You know, let's explain, I have essential oils.
Explain this to the lay person who hasn't been to medical conferences going, what's the big deal with biofilm?
well, biofilms, there was one researcher out in California. He found that biofilms would make things 100 times, and in some cases, 1,000 times more drug resistant. And so he was saying that, you know, 100 time dose of whatever antibiotic would probably be very toxic or may even kill somebody. So you can't really give the liver at that levels. So, you know, these biofilms are basically just slime that they hide in. And they find when they analyze the biofilm, there's actually not just one species, but there can be multiple species in there. And they swap like things like genes. If one of them gets like a drug resistant gene to say doxycycline, they can like swap that with a co-infection or staph or E. coli or whatever else is in there.
So this shield, for lack of a better word, is preventing a lot of the treatments people are taking, the things that they're putting into their bodies to try to deal with this. It's just not getting working through. So you're using essential oils to essentially break down that shield so that what people are using, including essential oils, can get to the source.
Yeah. And also we make the essential oils in some cases into a microparticle so that it's kind of like a Trojan horse strategy. They're able to penetrate biofilms in this microparticles and get in and then release the essential oil. Because with some patients, you don't always want to break open the biofilms too early, because then you release a lot of the toxins and inflammation and infections in there, and they can have a Herx-like response to that. Mm-hmm. So we also are looking at how do we, like, you know, be more precise and get the stuff in there without ripping, you know, the contents open.
Yeah. I think I remember last time we talked, we started getting into these microparticle essential oils. And I believe at the time you were creating those in your own lab. They weren't for sale. Has any of that changed?
They're still only available to our patients. Okay. We're, you know, with the COVID pandemic, most of the research funding is going towards that, and very, you know, it's reduced to other, you know, infections, even though the other infections are still around and
Right. Making
humanity.
Yeah. So for people listening at home, let's say that they are, undergoing a Lyme protocol, perhaps with a different doctor. They don't necessarily have access to come see you as a patient necessarily. What kind of advice can you give them and about conversations they can have with their practitioner of how to incorporate the essential oils they might have at home into their protocol? Because I think a fear a lot of people might have is, well, you know, I don't want to introduce something new and mess something up, you know, or introduce something too early or cause a Herx response or do it wrong. And I know it's tricky because I'm sure everyone listening says, well, I want to go see Greg. I want to be his patient, but that's not always possible or practical for a lot of people.
Right. So what I recommend is, you know, you have your practitioner, you need to work with them because they're providing the remedies for you. And you can try educating them. There are essential oils that we use that help detoxify, reduce inflammation. Lavender is one of the more common ones. Eucalyptus globulus, also turmeric. Those are essential oils that we test a lot for with patients, especially that are, you know, more inflamed, more toxic. And so then putting together customized targeted remedies, which may be essential oils that are mainly anti-inflammatory and not heavily antimicrobial in the beginning. Mm-hmm. Given that we've done the research, we understand what are the internal safe dosages for these different essential oils. However, you know, many practitioners that aren't trained in essential oils won't know that. And they may go on, you know, a lot of the information that says, you know, don't use essential oils internally. Right, so, right. Follow your practitioners, you know, what they want to do. And, you know, if you need to do your research on your own, then, you know, you can bring that to them. Yeah. In order to keep them in the loop.
This might be a good time to bring up your trainings that you provide, though, because those could be helpful for, I think, the lay person, if I'm not mistaken, might be a little above their head, but they could still really benefit from some of the trainings you provide that are geared towards practitioners. But also, if you're working with a practitioner you really love, you could say, well, hey, you know, have you heard of Greg Lee's work? He actually does trainings for providers. You know, perhaps you can learn how you can incorporate oils into your treatments.
Yeah. So we offer master classes on essential oils periodically. I think the next one is going to start January 28th. And it's several classes that go into, hey, these essential oils and these studies have an effect against, you know, the Lyme and these other like co-infections. And then also some of the challenges that, and how do you detox with essential oils? How do you, you know, help build the energy in when patients are, you know, fatigued? How do you help them with relieving symptoms like brain fog? And so it's different strategies other than just kill the infection strategies. It's really about tending the whole person, nourishing them, getting them more functional along the way of, you know, addressing the infections. So basically, it may be a more nourishing, detoxifying in the beginning and a very little bit of antimicrobials. And then as the person's less toxic, less inflamed, then ramping up the more antimicrobial remedies. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah. And how long is the training? How much content is provided in that?
So we have, it's a 6-week training that I have, you know, and there's also 2 additional weeks of bonus training. And basically we go into, you know, which essential oils are effective against what kinds of infections. Could be anything from mold, fungal infections, toxins, which ones inhibit which kinds of different kinds of inflammation, which ones are effective against parasites. And then also we talk about what delivery methods are effective at getting them deeper into the brain, under the biofilms, into the cells, into the gut to heal the gut. And then also talking about things like case studies, because when you really see, you know, what do patients go through, where they start at, and the kind of improvements they make with these remedies, a lot of my students have reported that it's really helped them to get beyond where they've kind of been plateaued for a long time, where they've been stuck, and really gotten them over that hump. So we go into like different ways of really targeted delivery, which makes a huge difference, especially persons mainly a neurological or a gut or a pain symptoms that are showing up because of their infections.
Well, thank you for explaining all that. And we'll definitely put a link for people to find that below wherever you're watching or listening to this interview right now. And if someone can't find it and they really want more information on this, I mean, let me be your connector. So just email me, let me know if you need help connecting to any of those resources that Greg provides. Because again, I just think that what you're doing, Greg, and what you're putting out there and the trainings that you're doing, it's just unlike what I've seen anyone else doing. And I just want to say thank you from the bottom of my heart for sharing that. You know, for it's not easy to put together a whole training for other people and for other practitioners, especially when you yourself are a practitioner and you're actively trying to help your patients. And, you know, so taking the time to put that together, taking the time to come and talk to, you know, me and our group and our listeners here, it just means a lot to me personally, and I just want to say thank you.
Well, our mission is to help 1 million people plus with Lyme over the next 10 years. So having that as our goal, it really helps focus us and galvanize us to say, hey, I can't treat 1 million people, but I can train, you know, 1,000 other practitioners to treat 1,000 other patients. So that's our mission that we're, you know, wholeheartedly putting ourselves into at this point. So hence the training.
That's great. And when you say we, I just want to clarify so people can kind of look this up if they want. What's the kind of umbrella that you're working under?
So we're called the Lyme Research and Healing Center, we can be looked up under goodbylyme.com. And we are currently researching not only advanced diagnostics, but also, you know, microparticle remedies to treat multiple infections to help patients. And, you know, most of that information I've also presented at, you know, the ILADS Lyme conferences and other conferences. So those are out there also. And also the Chronic Lyme Summit and Best of Chronic Lyme Summits. I'm also on those too.
All right, Greg. Well, we will let you get back to saving the world in my eyes.
Well, thank you for helping me get the word out. I really appreciate what you're doing. You're helping so many people, you know, and it's really an honor for me to be on here with you. Thank you.
Thanks so much for tuning in, everyone. Again, if you listened to this episode and you thought, gosh, I wish I was there and I could ask Greg or Samantha my essential oil question right here on the call. Well, that's exactly what we do in Essential Oil Insiders. You heard the interview portion. You didn't get to hear the Q&A portion, but you can join us as an insider for free for 30 days. Just go to revolutionoilspodcast.com/insiders. Not only do you get access to these awesome private Q&A Zoom calls live, but you also get access to the entire archives, which is chock full of intensive essential oil trainings,
profiles of essential oils, recipes, and more. I hope to see you on the inside. We'll catch you again here next week. Until then, keep on learning, keep on discovering, and most importantly, keep on treating yourself well. You are worth it.